Good morning. I'm not sure about you, but we lost our power last night for a little bit with that storm that blew through with the lightning. But it's nice to have some sunshine this morning. Hospitable sunshine, which is what Matthew was talking about, welcoming and hospitality. There is a marvelous poem by the holy Rumi that compares the human soul to a guest house. And it's a marvelous image. It's a guest house that's able to welcome anything that arises in the human soul, that doesn't shut out anything. And I say that because I'm going to spend some time talking about sin and lust. And it's the first line in the letter to the Romans today from Paul. I don't recall ever doing a sermon or preaching about sin and lust. It's not something we talk that much about. Although Holly has asked me for years to talk more about sin, so I'll make the connection with sin and lust. And usually we don't do much with lust. It's been truncated, that passion, that vice, into this, and really trivialized into simply sexual desire. And if that's, well, that's something Paul struggles with in his own life, it would seem. But oftentimes it doesn't seem much hope when we hear a passage like this from Paul, that opening partial sentence about sin and lust dominating our body. And if you go back into history, say to one of the great saints in our tradition, back to Anselm, well, the presumption is lust has control of all of us. Such control of all of us, such blinding control of all of us, that we're doomed to hell. He was quite clear and quite vivid in his language. So we're under the sway of this powerful passion, and we cannot get out from under it. So I don't think actually Anselm is too much help. But there is insight into this exploration of sin and lust from Julian of Norwich in the 13th and 14th century. So that's where I want to go back to, and then we'll perhaps have new eyes and hearts and souls to explore this passion, this vice of lust, and what it does to us in our lives. So I want to do it through Julian's parable of the Lord and Servant, which we've talked about in the past. And Anselm, who I just mentioned, had his version of that parable, and we talked about this God who's quite a vicious and mean and judgmental character, that there's a servant who goes off to do the Lord's bidding. He stumbles and falls, and Anselm says the servant gets what's coming to him, which is eternal damnation, because we're basically vicious creatures. But Julian tells her version of this, and I'm going to tell it liberally. So now word from Julian. So there is a Lord, a Master, who sits on a throne. And this Lord, this Master, is amazing, is awesome, because he sits there in peace, in tranquility, not agitated. There's nothing of viciousness about him. There's really nothing of a judgment about this Lord and Master. This merciful, gracious disposition as he sits there in repose on his throne. And he asks a servant, he bids a servant to go and do this task for him. And the servant comes, and the servant is eager. The servant wants to do the Lord's bidding. It's almost kind of lustful. And what lust really means in the spiritual tradition, and still in the German Lust, it means this inordinate desire, this inordinate, oversized longing. That's what it means. It's oversized, out of proportion longing. And so the servant has this, he's so eager to do the Lord's bidding, it gets the best of him, and he's not paying attention. He's not wise in his heart. He's not looking about him. And Julian says he goes out, he's running, and he stumbles and he falls. He screws up. And Julian looks upon the servant, and she's wondering, did he fall? Did he screw up here because he's a malicious person, like Anselm said, like he has evil in his heart and he's up to no good? And Julian says, I look upon this servant who's falling, and as much as I look, all I can find is just this enormous desire, this deep desire, as he lays there. And he's laying there in pain. Julian describes it, he's kind of fallen into a little dell, a little dip in the land. And she says, the greatest pain that I see this fellow is in is that he just can't turn his head to realize his gracious Lord and Master is not there as judge, not there to impart shame and guilt, but to lift him up. But he just can't turn his head to see. He's paralyzed by this eagerness that he has to get something done. It blinds him to the bigger picture. He's missing, in the Greek, he's missing his mark. Sin is hamartia, we miss the mark. We don't miss the mark because we're not narrow enough, we're not squinting, you know. We miss the mark because our vision isn't wide enough. It isn't bracing enough. We're not seeing all of reality. It's like all of life's energy is being funneled and driven through a little straw. And that little straw is driving us, and we can't break free to see the bigger picture. And so he's lying there. He can't see the graciousness, the mercy of this tender presence of God. That's what lust does. It's so big in our lives. It's so out of proportion. We can have this compelling drive, this compelling need, and it narrows down our focus. It gives us this tunnel vision, and we just don't have the larger picture. Now, it can be lust for sex. Usually, that's not the case. It's lust for and desire for something else. So let me give you a couple examples. Oftentimes, as human beings, you and I, we're so afraid that things won't go the way we want them to go. We believe they have to go. They need to go. There's a narrow little kind of straw-like path. And that fear about things not unfolding the way we want them to unfold leads us to be passionately, lustfully driven to be in control. But it's hard to be in control when you're surrounded by other people. Right? I mean, we kind of mess up each other's plans. And so what we do, it's a fascinating process, when we're afraid we're going to control, we go into our wee little heads, and we shut down conversation, and we only listen to our own thoughts. And I was reading this past week a wonderful contemporary therapist, her name is Karen Moroda, and she's talking about her patients. But as I was reading it, she's talking about me and you and all of us, uncomfortably so. So she's describing this fear and this control and what it does to us. She goes, we often take what is a correct observation, and then based on our fear, we come to an incorrect conclusion. Have you ever done that? You look at someone, I know what Jim is thinking. How do I know? Oh, I just know. I infer. And she goes on to say, we come to these conclusions by using inference rather than by talking to the other person in the conflict. And people who are quite bright and perceptive are often the worst. Because they are confident in their ability. I remember being in the room one time with a leader in an organization, and they came over afterwards to me and said, Kevin, I know the people across the room, they've been talking about me this whole time. I said, really? Well, how do you know that? I just know. Now we can kind of laugh, but we've all done it. I just know what my mom is thinking. I know what my coworkers think. I don't even ask. I go through these inferences in my own mind, and what I'm doing, I'm shutting out the breadth of reality, and I just am compelled by this lustful desire to be in control, and I no longer pay attention. Because I'd rather not Ezekiel screw up my inference. We all do it. That's an example of lust. It's out of proportion. It's great to have desire. But when it shuts us down and narrows our heart and mind and our body, that's what Paul begins. It begins to rule us. And it does it with all of us. Another example. It's close to the first one, but it's slightly different. And perhaps I help get a feel for it. Sometimes we have been so hurt, perhaps as children, our hearts, maybe our bodies. It's emotional hurt or physical hurt, or we've been ignored. And it's almost like we come up with a vow that no one will ever abuse me again. No one will ever get into my heart and hurt me and bruise me again. I will be the one who has the power. Right? I will be the one that determines who gets in and what gets out. We have this innate, inordinate desire to be the one who has the power so we will never be hurt. And what happens, we'll never be vulnerable again, we'll never be soft again, we'll never be open again. We'll be the ones who have the power. It becomes a black and white world of winners and losers, and by God, I'll always be the one who wins because I know what it feels like to lose and to hurt. And so all of life's energy gets funneled into that small straw of being the one who has the power. And our hearts get hard and brittle, and we're unhappy. I love that hymn Jan chose for the Slain the Irish ballad for the gospel. God's presence is balm. It's not, as Anselm thought, judgment. It's not condemnation. It's not shame or guilt. It's balm. And by God, we need balm. We need to come to realization that the presence of the holy in our life is something that invites us to let go, of that passion that funnels the entire life force into such a narrow little stream. Julian, the wisdom, it just always amazes me. Because you wonder, how do we make our way through a passion that has such control and such strength as lust? You know, once we bracket off the whole problem of moral sexuality and just kind of deal with this life force and how it becomes so narrow and not its gracious bigness and embracing quality, how do we break through that confinement? And Julian says, pay attention. It's nothing magical. He says, pay attention when it comes up. It's kind of like a good Buddhist. See what's going on. And question yourself. Question our presuppositions. Why do I think my inferences are so right when I haven't thought? Why do I feel like I'm so threatened here and my heart needs to be closed off? What I'm inviting us to do is not easy at all. Because our bodies, our nervous system gets used to that narrow band of lust. But Julian says it's going to be our best teacher if we can pay attention to it and wake up to it. Not in a way that we judge ourselves, that we say, oh, this is what I'm doing. I'm afraid. I'm vulnerable. But I can be that. And that's our freedom, that's our redemption, that's our salvation, to use those biblical words. It heals us. it is not healing to be confined to a straw that has the force of a fire hose. But to have the wide embrace of a Lake Superior that goes on to the expanse of the horizon, that's a balm. It's a grace. And it saves us. Amen.